Good morning. This is the meeting of the Arizona Board of Physical Therapy, and it's being recorded. It's 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday, April 22nd. Dr. Bastillo, after you call the meeting to order, we'll do a roll call of board members and staff and proceed with the reading of the board's mission statement.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you, and we'll call the April 22nd, 2025 Arizona Board of Physical Therapy meeting to order.
Thank you. Dr. Bastillo?
Here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
Dr. Hike?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Here.
Mr. Barton?
Here.
Dr. King?
Here.
And board staff, Ms. Crowley?
Here.
Ms. Bryant?
Here.
Ms. Richardson?
Present.
Dr. Sinish?
Here.
And my name is Judy Chappius. Mr. Barton, if you will read the board's mission statement, please.
Certainly. The mission of the Arizona Board of Physical Therapy is to protect the public from the incompetent, unprofessional, and unlawful practice of physical therapy. The Arizona Physical Therapy Practice Act establishes the standards for the practice of physical therapy, continued competence and testing, and defines the scope and limitations of practice. The board licenses qualified applicants as physical therapists and physical therapist assistants and receives, investigates, and adjudicates complaints against these licenses.
Great, thank you.
Dr. Bastillo, the meeting is yours.
First item on the agenda is to review the minutes from the March 25th, 2025 regular session and executive session A meeting minutes. We can take them together. Are there any corrections?
This is Mr. Barton. I've reviewed the minutes and move that we approve them.
Second.
Who did the second?
Giovanni.
Mr. Leone.
Thank you.
You ready for the vote?
We are.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda consisting of the regular session and executive session A meeting minutes from the March 25th, 2025 board meeting. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Abstain.
That motion passes.
Okay, moving on to number 4B4, review, consideration, and possible action regarding the completed supervised clinical practice period and possible licensure of foreign educated physical therapist applicants. First one is Heba Amira.
So at its April 23rd, 2024 board meeting, the board determined that Heba Amira should complete a supervised clinical practice period as part of her application for licensure. The midpoint clinical performance report was reviewed at the March 22nd, 2025 board meeting, and attached for board review was the final clinical performance report from her supervised clinical practice period. The board is asked to determine whether to approve licensure or issue an additional supervised clinical practice period. I do believe Ms. Amira was on the call if you had any questions.
Any questions or concerns? And I move that we approve the application for licensure.
Second.
Any further discussion? I think we are ready.
Okay, so it's been moved and seconded to accept Ms. Amira's completed supervised clinical practice period reports and approve her for licensure and issue her Arizona physical therapist license. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Hyde?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Dr. Bastian, everyone.
Our next person on the list is Philip Edmondson.
Yes, Philip Edmondson appeared before the board at its October 1st, 2024 meeting when the board determined to require a supervised clinical practice period. Both the midpoint and final evaluations were submitted back to back due to a technological error. A summary was provided for your explanation. A summary of the explanation was provided for your review. The information provided to the memo for board review is the midpoint and the final clinical performance report for the supervised clinical practice period. The board is asked to determine whether to approve Mr. Edmondson for licensure or issue additional supervised clinical practice.
Anyone have any questions or concerns?
I'm not sure if Mr. Edmondson is on the call. Mr. Edmondson?
I just have a question about in terms of the comments that were made by the supervisor, that it says proficient in all of the cases. It just seems like that I don't know what the requirements are for that form, except for does this just say, you know, that they've met these things. When you look at the comparison of the two, you see a big difference in terms of the comments that were made. So, for example, professionalism, proficient in all areas. I'm assuming that's that all those items in the categories are proficient in all. It just seems like a very vague statement to be made over and over again and not provide more info about each item. So I don't know the form well enough to be able to interpret what proficient in all for professionalism is.
It looks like in the midterm, or maybe it's the final, there's a couple of criteria: dresses appropriately, interacts with all members of the healthcare team, professionally practices personal hygiene. Let's see what's the rest of it. Some of them do have
some comments.
Mm-hmm. Little bullet points kind of describing here, willingly accepts responsibility for actions, demonstrates initiative and response to requests in helpful and prompt manner, follows through on tasks. That's positive and professional attitude. There's professional boundaries. That has a couple of descriptions. I was going to tell you what page number they're on, but page like 23 of 37 has got a couple of things, maybe, John, to look at and see if that helps with what your question is.
Okay, yep.
Do you see the criteria?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay.
Does that help?
It does, yeah. As I scanned through it, I kept seeing proficient in all in the final, and I guess that's enough.
Yeah, thank you.
I move that we accept Mr. Edmondson's application and approve licensure.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Okay.
It's been moved and seconded to accept Philip Edmondson's completed supervised clinical practice period reports and approve his licensure application and issue his Arizona physical therapist license. Dr. Bastia?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Okay. And next we have our consent agenda under A, applications for approval of physical therapist licensure with the people Thomas Tardif and Andrea Malagon. Is there anyone that would like to see any person pulled?
I would move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve consent agenda item 5A. Dr. Basile?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes. So that motion included Thomas Tardif and Andrea Malagon. If you are on this call, you are more than welcome to stay, but you are not required to.
Thank you for your time this morning. This is Andrea.
Thank you. Good luck.
Yes, thank you.
This is Tom. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, so now we jump all the way to 9, initial reviews and preliminary reviews, and I have a script to read for those. So this is the time and place for the board's initial review of complaints. There are 5 initial reviews and 3 preliminary reviews for the board to consider. The matters will be heard by the board pursuant to its authority under ARS 32-2045. For everyone's benefit, I will provide a brief summary on how the board will conduct its initial reviews. The summary applies to all cases that we will hear today, and I will not repeat it for each case. First, I will begin with introductions. My name is Dr. Bustillo, and I am the board's chairperson. I will now ask the other board members to introduce themselves.
Giovanni Leone, professional member and board vice president.
John Hike, secretary and professional member.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Joshua Barton, public member.
Kelly King, professional member.
Thank you. For those participating in the initial reviews, please be aware that we have read all the materials submitted. If at any time it is necessary to refer to patients, please use initials only. In each case, the board will first hear a brief summary of the investigative report from its staff. Once staff is done, the board will ask the complainant, if present, if they wish to address the board, and then the board will ask the professional, if present, and their attorney, if represented, if they would like to do the same. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask that those speaking not take time to repeating information that the board has already received. You will be given the same amount of time to address the board that it took to present the investigative report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Please keep in mind that this is not the time or place for the complainant and the professional to address each other. The board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disruptive conduct. Those violating the policy, after being given an opportunity to modify their behavior, will be removed from the meeting room. Once the board concludes its discussion with the parties, it will move into deliberations. While the parties are free to stay and listen to the deliberations, we ask that you respect the fact that we are now discussing the case amongst ourselves and request that you do not interrupt the process. The board's options include, but are not limited to, dismissing the complaint, taking non-disciplinary action such as issuing an advisory letter or an order for continuing education, offering the professional a consent agreement, requesting the professional participate in an informal hearing, or remanding the matter to formal hearing. The board may also determine whether the matter warrants referral to any other agency or authority. Before we call the first case, I want to advise everyone that initial reviews are audio recorded. Accordingly, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly, and that only one person speak at a time. Lastly, as a reminder to the board, this is not an informal hearing. If you have a few questions that will help you better understand the case and take action to potentially resolve the case through dismissal, non-disciplinary action, or consent agreement for either disciplinary or non-disciplinary action, please feel free to ask them. However, if you have a number of substantive questions and or feel the case requires additional investigation or may warrant referral to another agency or authority, it may be appropriate to move the case to an informal hearing. And our first case is case 2426, Alan Ralston, PTA.
All right, good morning. Mr. Ralston was planning to attend today's meeting. Mr. Ralston, are you on the call this morning?
Okay. I'm here.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Ralston.
Good morning.
All right. Mr. Ralston self-reported a DUI that occurred on August 19th, 2024, within the 10 working day regulatory requirement. It was brought to the board as a preliminary review at the October 1st, 2024 meeting, and the board voted to open a case to obtain additional information. Mr. Ralston sought out and completed an alcohol treatment program prior to his court date and reports learning multiple tools that he has implemented to help maintain his sobriety. At his court appearance on February 25th, 2025, the extreme DUI charge was dismissed and he was charged with driving with an illegal alcohol concentration of 0.08 or more. His BAC was not revealed. Mr. Ralston has made significant progress toward the court-ordered actions as described in the investigative report. When he submitted the alcohol screening to board staff, it was discovered that this was his third DUI, not his second as previously reported. He indicated that it occurred approximately 30 years ago before he was a PTA and did not recall if he had previously disclosed it to the board. When he filled out his initial PTA application, he answered no to the question about ever having criminal charges filed against him. The potential violations identified in the investigative report are ARS 32-2044-8, practicing as a physical therapist or working as a physical therapist assistant when physical or mental abilities are impaired by disease or trauma, by the use of controlled substances or other habit-forming drugs, chemicals, or alcohol, or by other causes. And the board may also wish to consider ARS 32-2044-3, obtaining or attempting to obtain a license by fraud or misrepresentation. Mr. Ralston has maintained his sobriety since August 19, 2020, and he plans to continue with the changes he has made to continue to maintain his sobriety. This matter is for your review.
Thank you. Mr. Ralston, do you have a statement for the board or are you willing to answer questions?
I'm willing to answer any questions.
Okay. Does anyone have questions for Mr. Ralston?
Just so that I'm clear, Mr. Ralston, what's the current status as far as working with the court? Are you just kind of going through all of the items that they've assigned of you, or is that process kind of done at this point?
It's getting towards the tail end. I have completed my jail time. I am in the process of completing my community service hours. Trying to think of anything else. I am going to be doing some house arrest coming up pretty soon. I have to go report for that, but I'm trying to get it all done in a timely manner.
Okay. I know with this being your third DUI, and it can just be a little bit concerning. We want to make sure that you have, you know, the help that you need. Do you feel like you're in a good place as far as the support that can help you, you know, with this specific situation? What's your plan moving forward to ensure that this is not something that affects you down the road again?
Well, the first question, if I understood correctly, yes, I do think I'm in a good place. I have put in, for lack of better words, tools, et cetera. I have people I talk to. I have routines that I do. I am doing jujitsu. For me, that's just something to help me. It helps discipline. It helps give me something else to channel my energy into. I've tried to work on myself as a person and who I am and understand, you know, what happened and why I did what I did. I think I'm in a much better place. Awesome. I know what was said earlier, but I haven't said any, touched anything since the date it happened. So that would be August 19th. So it's been 8 months.
And congratulations on that.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Ralston, do you attend meetings or do you have another support group?
I do not attend. If you're referring to AA meetings, no, I do not. Part of the reason for that was when things first happened, I did question that, and the person that I talked to said to that they thought at the time I'd be better off getting into the counseling, which I did do on my own. And I do have accountability partners, for lack of better words. I don't know, there's different wording for it, but I do have people that I can talk to on a daily basis that I can call. So I do have, accountability and safety nets already in place.
Great. Have you finished your counseling or is that ongoing?
No, that the, well, to me, this is always ongoing, but the formal counseling has been completed, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Are you currently working? Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Are you currently working as a PTA?
Yes, sir.
What kind of setting do you work in?
Skilled nursing facility.
Okay. And do you feel like, is this anything that you feel affects your ability to perform patient care? You know, should it come up again in the future? Is this something that typically happens outside of patient care and doesn't really go to the work setting with you? I'd just like to get a little bit of, you know, your thoughts on that.
Well, if I understood your question correctly, sir, for one, I just wanted to say it's not something that I did every day. It wasn't something that was a daily thing for me. However, no, I do not think it has affected me. And one of the letters of Perica reference that you have received for the October meeting, it was put in there that it that I have never allowed my situation to affect my work. That I have it in the past and it won't in the future. And like I said, I'm a different person now than I was then. I've put things in place so that this will not happen again.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I think it's good to hear that you have completed your counseling and have support and especially accountability partners. You know, because we know the research on addiction is that we tend to find something else to be addicted to. It could be working out or work or something else. So I'm glad you have people in your space that will hold you accountable should something else take the place of the alcohol.
Thank you very much. I am continuing to work on myself.
Any further questions? We have a motion.
Karen, would the motion be to dismiss if there's no action or take, like, what would the...
Looks like a head nod from Mr. Harris there.
Okay.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the board, if you don't believe that this rises to a violation, then you would have, your options to dismiss or your other non-disciplinary options, the advisory letter or non-disciplinary order for CE.
I think for me, I mean, he reported. Mm-hmm. Within the timeline, we opened for more information. I'm satisfied with the information, personally, with the information and with the actions that he has taken and his accountability and following through with court orders. So I'm comfortable making a motion to dismiss.
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready.
In case 2426, Alan Ralston, PTA, it has been moved and seconded to dismiss. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Best of luck to you, Mr. Ralston. I hope everything goes very well.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Madam President, I interrupt for just a second.
Of course.
Before you move on to the case, in looking at the cases I have to present and the attendees, there's one case toward the end of the agenda that Mr. Flynn is representing, and I noticed that he's present as well as his client, Mr. Nyberg. It's item 11A.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder if you might consider reordering the agenda, given the length of that particular case. We might be able to move that ahead and allow Mr. Carey to represent his client and then move forward with the other ones. Just something to consider.
Yeah. Does anyone have any objections to reordering the agenda?
Mm-mm.
That's all assuming right. I see that Mr. Carey is on and that his client, Mr. Nyberg, is also present.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. We'll be efficient there. Okay. So we will reorder the agenda going up to number 11, case 2383, Matthew Nyberg, PT.
And Mr. Nyberg, I do want to just confirm that you are present. I know he's listed on our attendees, but that he hasn't walked away from his computer. Mr. Nyberg? He's off mute. Mr. Nyberg, are you present?
It looks like his screen changed, but Matt, are you able to hear the board?
Shoot. Well, perhaps we can, Mr. Carey, it's up to you. I mean, we could do another case and come back.
Yeah, why don't I reach out offline so that I'm not slowing down your agenda, and I'll pick you, Wendy, right after I chat with Matt. Make sure you can get on the call.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. Okay, so we will revert back to 9B, case 2428, Nivedita Krishnamurthy, PT.
Yes, Ms. Krishnamurthy, I believe, is present, and patient LM indicated to me yesterday that she would be present. Ms. Krishnamurthy, are you present?
I am.
And patient LM, are you present? Was that a confirmation, LM? I heard something, but it was kind of garbled.
Yeah.
Patient LM, are you present?
I don't know if that's for me, but I'm Lisa Magana, LM. Okay.
Yes. Thank you. Oh. Appreciate that. We will be identifying you by your initials going forward. So for a briefing on this case, this is case 2428, Nivedita Krishnamurthy. The board reviewed this case as a preliminary review December 17th meeting of 2024. It was a subsequent review of the patient's medical record, which you had in your materials as Exhibit 1. The board did not find the allegations made by the patient were supported. Those allegations were that the patient was inappropriately touched by a male staff member. However, after review of the medical record and statements by the patient and Ms. Krishnamurthy, the board moved to open a case and adopted potential violations related to deficiencies in documentation and the appropriate progression of the clinical plan of care. At that time, the board ordered 3 additional medical records be reviewed by board staff as part of the ongoing investigation. Ms. Krishnamurthy provided a written response to the complaint, which was included as Exhibit 2. She received a draft copy of the investigative report and provided a link provided a lengthy supplemental written response with additional documents provided, and that was included in your materials as Exhibit 6. She responded to each of the deficiencies outlined. However, in most of her responses, she does not provide adequate clinical support to mitigate the deficiency. Subsequent to receiving the notice of the complaint, Ms. Krishnamurthy did complete 3 online CEUs in the area of documentation, and that was completed in December of 2024. Copies of the CEUs were included as Exhibit 2A. And she requested that her employer complete an audit of her clinical records. That was Exhibit 2B. At the time that the board opened the case, the board identified the following statute violations that may apply. ARS 32-2044, engaging the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist due to a deliberate or negligent act or failure to act regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established, and ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate records, and as it relates to R424-304, adequate patient records. This case is for your review.
Dr. Krishnamurthy, do you have opening comment or anything you'd like to say to the board?
Based on the last one, I did complete give notes on like where I had given all the details that has to be done. But I did make an effort because it was an eye-opener for me as well, and I had made real good changes. And I do take my peers into consideration. They ongoingly check my stuff in order to make sure like I don't do anything like that. I have a record for electrical stem if in case, because I usually do it on everything on my laptop. If in case anything is not there, I try to make a record these days manually in my thing so that charts are not pulled away from me before it is. And I always check at the end of the day, which I did not do before. I check them. It is rechecked twice or thrice. And I try to make sure all as much I could in my control, I get all the details. And I document as much I can in the daily notes, as much, you know, in detail I could, because I saw that as something that it is actually an eye-opener for me, as I said, and I'm trying to take my best, the best interest. I always keep my patients as my priority when I do it, and I try to make sure you have everything in my documentations all the way through.
Okay. Are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, ma'am.
Do we have any initial questions?
Dr. Krishnamurthy, what are some things, because I saw you've taken some continuing education on documentation. What are some main aspects of documentation that you learned within those courses that you are implementing into your documentation now that you were lacking previously?
Sir, I have something like, I usually documented it as one bad scenario, but I learned that accuracy of every single information that I hear from the patients, the clarity of them, the timeliness of everything and completeness of things as much I can to maintain that ethical standard, you know. And I always, if in case something is missed in the patient records when they fill in, I try to go in and manually add those informations in the electronic record, which I can see as I use my laptop. In that way, every single information is there. So all the essentials that will protect me and the patient are being documented all the time.
Excellent. And I know, I mean, a lot of times these courses, they're just kind of more general guidelines. You know, the people putting on the courses may get them, you know, from what insurance companies might require and things like that. But you know, the Arizona statutes have their own guidelines in terms of what your documentation should have. Have you had a chance to go over the rules and the statutes within the Practice Act for Arizona, just to kind of see what are the specific things you should be making sure that you document that maybe weren't touched on in those courses?
Yes, sir. Because like, just because I have my license here as well as in Texas, I just tried to go have all these addressed, and I did have a conversation with my peers on like things that what I had missed as well. And that way, you know, like people who have been working in Arizona for a longer time, we try to discuss on these aspects as a peer group, as well as within the company as such, and even outside of work. So I try to make sure like I get all those insights as much I can to better myself and not to do this ever again.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Hi, it's Dr. King. Just a quick question. Am I understanding that you have shared this experience and what you've learned about documentation with your colleagues that you work with?
It is more like a conversation of like, hey, what is something that, you know, that you follow, kind of a peer to peer kind of things. So when I say this, I don't disclose all this as per the law. But it is more like a peer to peer on general documentations in our, general meetings that we have. In that way, they try to bring in more of like the quality care in our company. So they try to discuss on the tags because we use the electronic system, and we usually face, as a newbie sometimes, like, you know, tags that are there that I do not know. So they try to walk us through all this. In that way, you know, all the essential tabs are being addressed, and we try to have a complete documentation being there so that patients and the fellow PTs are aware of every single thing of the previous session.
Okay, got it. And can you just help us understand? So when you take a documentation course, it talks about how to document and what, you know, but there were lots of things missing from your evaluation. So did you take any CEUs that walk you through how to do or all the aspects that need to be part of an evaluation and then to doc, because we generally only document what we did, but there were pieces that you either didn't do or did and didn't document. So did any of your CEUs really thoroughly review how to do a full evaluation?
Among the three, there was one which had some more details on it, but to answer the question of the thorough documentation, when we have patients, when they fill the initial medical summary from the front desk and then come back, because it is being uploaded in the system, I just make sure like everything is addressed, and if there is any change, they go back and complete it. Some, there are occasions wherein which patients don't give their occupation at the first time. So, and or never say anything about their occupation. They just divert things like that. So in those occasions, like I try to ask them the second time and it is being attached. So in the electronic form, because I cannot go and manually correct it. And so I try to do the electronic version. For cardiovascular, that is something which, you know, if they have mentioned or if they complain about it. But these days, since I have done the course, I'm trying to be, you know, being diligent about, you know, completing all those check marks in my documentation now. I'm learning. I have learned. I know there is a lot to learn, but I'm trying to put in all the check blocks covered and try to check mark every single area that I have to address in all my documentations. Yes, ma'am. I'm trying to be more vigilant on those aspects.
Great. Thank you.
This is, go ahead.
No, you're first, ladies first.
Okay. This is Dr. Bustillo. I found that a lot of your daily notes had a tremendous amount of copy and paste with the subjective and the objective information. And it very confusing to me if everything is the same. Same subjective. Were you doing all of these cervical tests on patients every single time that they were in there? And to go back to a little bit of what Dr. King was saying, some of the evaluations were a little bit incomplete. You have some palpation, but you don't assess specific levels of cervical spine. And then to go into your treatment, you're doing general soft tissue massage. Are you doing any joint mobilization and to what levels? And, you know, where is that? Is the range of motion limited in the neck due to muscular tightness or joint tightness, or, you know, what is the limitation or anxiety? I mean, there was definitely some anxiety issues with a couple of the patients. So, it's hard to follow, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. So to answer that, ma'am, like, I know there are certain situations where it might look as if it is more like a copy paste. But we have a tab called daily comments wherein which I try to mark most of them. But for evaluation ones, if in case they have dates in it, and if it is measured on that particular day for my own referral, I try to pull it up. And if it is marked with the date, there is a change. And then there are some occasions wherein which I measure it because the patient shows some sort of a change. My sessions are usually an hour long, ma'am, and I try to make sure every patient is evaluated every single time because they show changes. So I try to do my best because there are days wherein which patients do not allow to do anything. They are anxious. Sometimes they are fine. There is a change in the next session based on the previous treatment. And with regard to soft tissue and all those, I try to make sure I go for a generalized one because if it is painful on one level, I try to go a level down and things like that. Yes, and but I did try to make changes to take off, delete as much I can as I go so that it doesn't confuse the next person. But I just wanted to make sure it is there so that it is easier for me to record or take away as I go. But I have learned that. And I am making those changes of deleting stuff. Yes.
I appreciate that you've taken some courses and that you've learned some items. The notes that we're reviewing don't show that. And there's lots of things that are missing. Gait analysis on the patient that is attending this meeting. Sensory assessment. There was another case where you didn't take vitals on a patient. It seems to me that there are multiple things that are not done in the cases that we reviewed, and they're concerning, and especially in terms of the vestibular content as well. So I think when we think about cervical and we think about vestibular, those areas, would you say, are areas that you see a lot of patients in those areas that have those types of conditions? Do you feel properly prepared to treat those patients?
So, yes, I have gotten training in those areas, sir. But given for the blood pressure, vitals being checked, if the patient is not complaining of severe or not even reporting, because one of my case out of the three that I presented, she gets anxious when she is in the school, not when she comes for therapy. So, and she is more relaxed, and then she tries, and anytime any conversation of the, or she thinks about it is what brings in her stuff, nothing else. I did, the patient has also completed the report, and even the doctor confirmed she doesn't have a blood pressure issue, but it is more her anxiety. So unless I do take blood pressure on patients, if in case they come in, like, you know, really jittery or something, and then, you know, like I see that happening, I do take it. But for one of my patient LM being here, the day she came in, walked in, she sat down for some time, but then she was fine. So, and you know, like that is, and she was talking fine too. So it is like, you know, that call of making that judgment of whether it is really needed or not needed was the key that particular day.
In terms of balance, we have three systems, right? We our eyes, our vestibular system, and our somatosensation. Somatosensation is the bottom of the feet. So if I'm walking around and I have a condition that's affecting my eyes, my feet, diabetes, all three systems, she has a strike against her in all three systems. I'd be anxious too if I was walking and trying to walk through an open environment and try to get to a place to where I can be stable. So that's not surprising to me that she would be anxious, or anyone would be anxious, if they have, you know, a strike against them in each of these systems. So that's concerning as well, in terms of specifically for the vestibular system, and what I see in what I've reviewed, and what you're looking at in your assessment for these patients.
So
potentially have balance problems. Sorry, yes. Go ahead.
No, I totally see where you're coming from, and then I totally agree on that. So when a patient is able to walk, like the first few sessions, the patient was on the table. She did all her exercises on the table. I never move them unless there is a need. They are on a grade belt. I am there. I always have one support staff next to me, my front office person, who is a female, all the time. So seeing the initial eval, my front office person always comes in when I have LM to help me, because I know I need some help. You know, like a pep talk or something like that. So if I miss a bit and I'm trying to check on something else, she's there behind talking or something like that. So yes, and she walks perfectly fine on that. But I wanted to address one at a time to make sure like she is fine. The comfort was the first thing that I wanted to give and get the confidence, because things have been, she had been on a rocky road for a longer time. And I want to gain the confidence first. So that was the first key in that part. And she was getting better. She did say that she was feeling a little better, and she was happy with me. I will be, I can say that because like LM is here. I'm not hiding that conversation. She was happy with me providing the treatment. And there was one day where in which we were standing next to the parallel bar doing it. And the following day is when she walked towards the bike and she was in the parallel bar, and, you know, things were offered, was denied. But then I did foresee, because it is the second time it is there, she's doing things. I foresaw like a sway. It was not a fall. She was like, oh, I'm not falling. But then I, on a preventive basis, I called a help. It was not even, you know, like for me, the bell that rings first is the safety of the patient first, irrespective of anything. But as far as whatever you said, I totally agree. Yes, given I would have progressed very slowly with that patient, but just because the confidence factor was a key for her, and getting, I want to let her anxiousness go down, being the basis of my, you know, for her to be compliant with therapy, to feel, you know, I can do other tests on her. I needed that support. So I had to be doing that, sir. But I do agree on it doesn't happen for all my patients.
Mindy, piggybacking on John's questions just really quick. Are the charts that we're reviewing in our notes the charts that were prior to any of the CEUs she's taken, or those since she took all the documentation and CEUs?
Give me a minute. I would have to look those up.
Some of them are after.
I just looked over that. Okay. She took two of the courses prior to the newer documentation that was submitted.
Okay.
And she took one of them kind of like during those documentations, right, that was submitted.
Oh, thank you, Giovanni.
I did take the two, but the next one I took was midway through the process, ma'am.
And so what I think I'm hearing in questions and discussion right now is that even having taken some of those courses, what you're documenting is more thorough, but what you're actually doing and then documenting is still a gap. Is that what you're saying, John?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought. And that was my question is like, you know, you take documentation courses and make sure you've got all the detail, but you only document what you do. And if you're not doing things thoroughly, then that's what's missing from the chart.
With LMs was the initial case, ma'am. So LMs did not have, that was the one flaw which led to all this. But yes, I am correcting because as I see, you know, I'm changing as I do it. And I have eyes on me in my workplace, which I have voluntarily asked them to have an eye on all this as well, randomly checking. So I'm doing I am putting all my effort to make sure it is done more at, for the board standard, ma'am.
What is the primary patient population that you treat? Like what's the majority, like the, if you look at a pie chart of all the diagnoses that come in and that are on your schedule, what's the majority of the diagnoses that you typically treat?
It just varies. I have equal share of everything, but most of my population are, I would say ortho, some of ortho, it varies, goes like a wave for me. Sometimes it is more ortho, neck, or else like sometimes it is neuro, sometimes it is more primarily aquatic. So it goes like a wave for me. It is nothing like a constant one, I would say.
Okay. Have you had CEUs, formal CEUs and vestibular?
Yes, ma'am. I have had formal CEUs in vestibular in the past as well, and one organized by the company too for vestibular rehab. I've been through that, and I have more success rate for vestibular in with my patients too. And if you go into the company's website of the Google reviews, I do have all my vestibular patients having a good result as they progress.
Okay, thank you.
So along those lines, when thinking cervical and vestibular, you noted in several of the cases that the C2 glide test was negative. And then you also do a neck torsion test. Can you sort of explain what you mean by the CT glide test was negative and what you're doing in a neck torsion test?
So for the neck, when it is just seated head torsion or head one, it is just to see if there is a cervicogenic dizziness component to it for those individuals, like turning, like if it is a head part when we move, compared to that if it is like a C2 of the muscle, the ligament as well. Sometimes patients who do not have that, if they have tight upper trap, they also show positive initially, but then as we work on the upper trap, it releases. So I have seen that happening for my patients. So I try to do it. If it is if it is positive, I don't do it. If it is negative, then I do, to see if it is cervicogenic oriented or things like that.
So in your neck torsion test, you are doing what?
You want me to explain the head torsion test, sir?
Yeah.
So when I typically do, it is mostly for cervicogenic dizziness. I either, if the patient can stand, I make them stand. If they're not standing, I just make them seated and on a chair, a rolling chair. And I try to make sure like the head is facing me and then they turn the body, you know, in the direction. And just to see if in case that creates a dizziness or anything like that.
Okay, thank you.
So this is an initial review. Do we feel like we need more information, more investigation into this, or
I would like to see notes that are current to show evidence that she has made changes. When we look at the notes that we're seeing, it sounds like, from what I heard, there's a mixture of notes. We do have 309 pages to review, which is a lot, but it seems to me that the vestibular and the cervical spine content is lacking.
So are you thinking maybe charts specific to, or at least one of them, including a patient with cervical or vestibular referral diagnosis?
Yes. So when I look at this note for this patient, as well as the, I think it's eardrum busted with fluid coming out, that's evidence of a TBI. And that's concerning in terms of looking at that and how that case, the second case, is documented.
Oh, so I did call the doctor's office on that eardrum where this fluid discharge was there post her episode of an argument at school. I did call the ENT because it is through an ENT referral, and they did confirm that she has an ear tube on before I treat, and they wanted me to work just on her neck. And I did ask for a neck x-ray, and I think the neck x-ray came like way too far because of authorization and all that stuff happening. And towards the end, they found out she had more of degeneration, cervical degenerations there. But I did ask, talk about this to the doctor initially, and they did say to work on the neck.
So they were directing you just to work on the neck?
Yes.
So Mr. Harris, would we then perhaps move to an informal hearing with further investigation?
You certainly can do that, Madam Chair, members of the board. What I would suggest, though, is that you direct staff as to specifically what additional information you would like. And then I guess it would be up to you to determine whether or not you want to review that at your next meeting or whenever, you know, possible, and then make a determination on next steps, or if you'd like to combine the two and review that. The challenge is notifying them if there's any concerns regarding the most recent, you know, review of the records.
Karen and John, I suspect this is what I'm going to suspect, that we will see probably similar charts to what we've seen so far. And so I'm wondering if in light of what we do have in front of us, and that some of the documentation happened after education, maybe we can think about what education would we recommend if these charts come back exactly the same, and maybe go ahead and make that recommendation now, whether it's CEUs or, you know, whatever it is, that what would we like to see or have her do now, because she's going to continue to treat. And so it's going to take time to get charts. And if we have some concerns about skills, right, or especially around a particular diagnosis, let's go ahead and have her do some of those CEUs as part of maybe a non-disciplinary board order or consent agreement or something like that, so that she can get those things in under her belt and we can move forward for her patients and for her. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think if we're looking at both, thoughts on substandard care with the, you know, with the thoughts on the cervical spine and vestibular and patient records, mm-hmm. Maybe a consent agreement would be the right way to go in terms of ordering specific continuing education and then having some monitoring chart review to see how that has played out.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, just to kind of build off Dr. King's suggestion, at this point, we could only ask her to do that. However, if you wanted to kind of try to, if you feel like you have enough information to make a final decision, you could certainly offer her a consent agreement requiring her to, you know, complete whatever continuing education you deem appropriate and put in any other terms of probation that you think are appropriate, like, monitoring of her record keeping and things of that nature. And then if she declines to sign it, then the matter could be brought forward to the board for an informal.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. What do you think, John?
Agreed. I think we should move towards a consent agreement then.
So if we're going to do that, what I would propose, and I don't want to get too far ahead of the process because I do under, I believe, Mindy, that you said that maybe the complainant is also.
Yes. Yes, the complainant is here.
And so, you know, before we entertain any motions, you may want to hear from the complainant as well. But if you're inclined after doing so to continue down, you know, consider offering a consent agreement, just keep in mind to refer back to the investigative report because we will need to adopt findings of facts and conclusions of law before we get to the actual order of probation.
Great. Thank you very much. Patient LM, is there anything that you would like to say?
Yes, this is for Vibrant Care, Nivedita, right? Correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I was just concerned because I never had an ear infection there. I don't know if she's talking about another person or me.
It was about another
patient. And if
it was about another patient, ma'am.
Yeah, perhaps if we could ask that the complainant, if you have any statements that you would like to make to the board as it relates to your treatment.
Of course. Yes, I do. First of all, I'm sorry.
No, thank you. I would just like you to refrain from engaging with the licensee, please.
Okay. First of all, she said she's trying to do safety for her patients, correct? Then why didn't she put me on the ballot instead of asking for a male to help me, instead of asking the other female to help me? I don't get it. Why didn't she put a belt around me to help me walk on the bars?
This is we've already talked about this part of the case.
Oh, okay.
Is there anything in addition?
No.
To that, no, that can.
No, I was just concerned.
Okay. Any other comments that you'd like to make to us?
No, that's it.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Do you want to take a stab at a motion, Dr. King?
Yes. Okay. I move that, well, we have to do findings of fact. Well, which do I do first? Do I define as a facts and conclusions?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So I move that, that the findings and facts and conclusions of law, that we accept the findings and facts and conclusions of law as presented in the investigative report.
Second. Any other discussion on that? I do think that both are substantiated, certainly documentation in my line, mm-hmm. and along with Dr. King's and Dr. Hike's questioning, there is some concern with standard of care.
And we, because you've added some additional, I think, findings of fact that may not be specifically outlined in the investigative report, could we just summarize what Dr. King and Dr. Hike have outlined as a finding of fact? What I heard both of you say is that the substandard care would relate to the assessment of cervical pathology. Is that?
Yes. In vestibular, I think you do have comments, though, within the findings of fact about differential diagnosis. And so differential special tests, gait analysis, balance, functional movement testing were not done well. And so I think that is actually in there.
Okay.
It just winds up being, I'm saying cervical and vestibular, that's, I think, encompassed within the differential.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to make sure, because if she does external monitoring, if the monitor needs to look for something specific, that might be helpful. So when Judy crafts the consent agreement, I'll make sure that specifically maybe more defined.
Perfect. Thanks, Mindy.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
So just a point of clarification, then you're still talking about what was identified in the investigative report as 32-2044-4, mm-hmm. 32-2044-20,
yep.
And as it relates to
304,
yeah.
Yes.
Perfect. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Okay. So, are you ready for the question?
Yes.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to adopt the allegations and potential violations as set forth in the investigative report as findings of fact and conclusions of law, including ARS 32-2044-4, ARS 32-2044-20, and as it relates to AAC R424-304. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
McLean.
And Mr. Barton?
Yes.
And Dr. King?
Yes.
Okay, that motion passes.
Dr. Hyde, do you want to make the motion regarding the rest of it, or would you like me to?
You're probably better skilled at the verbiage than I am, for sure, but I can facilitate if you think.
Maybe we can walk through the CEU. So I move that that we offer the licensee a consent agreement that includes we'll just start with with the outline of probation for 12 months. I'd like to see CEUs. I'm going to say 8 hours of cervical evaluation and treatment. I would say 4 hours of vestibular. You'll have to let me know if you think that's fair enough or if we need more.
I think more.
Okay. I would
say six or eight.
Okay. So we'll say 6 hours of vestibular specific evaluation and treatment, not just treatment.
Right.
And both of which can be taken online and need to be completed within the 12 months. And then I think the question is monitoring. I'll say monitoring of two charts over a 6 month period, just for to put it out there.
How about chart review?
Okay.
Rather than external monitoring?
Okay, I like it.
And specific differential diagnosis.
And it's specific to those particular ones that we're hoping to see rate improvement in. Okay. And so that's my motion.
But the chart review is not going to be done by board staff, correct?
Do we have a different?
We have to have external. So I think it needs
to be
monitoring.
Okay.
We don't do those anymore, so I would say
understood.
That was going to be my question, is there's a difference between external monitoring of a chart and just chart review, so.
The other thing that I would,
want to consider is
some documentation with Medicare standards and guidelines. The other one was pretty generic, and the patient population is likely so Medicare.
Dr. Bustillo, I had the same concern about, I don't know how confident I was in the courses that were taken.
Right.
And the 2-hour course actually was specific to Medicare.
Oh,
and
okay. Medicare. Okay.
But my concern is that I'm worried that they don't go much into depth on what truly belongs in an initial evaluation.
Right.
So I actually like to see something that is specific to documentation of initial evaluations.
I like it. Same way. I think 3 hours would be sufficient for that. What do you think?
I think so. I mean, I know on MedBridge, the course that I really like is about 1.5 to 2 hours. So I think 3 hours is sufficient.
Okay. So we'll add 3 hours of documentation, CEUs specific to an initial evaluation.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you get all that, Judy?
I think I've got, I think so. We'll see in a moment. But can we go back to the clinical monitoring, please? I lost you there.
I suggested 2 charts.
Do you want that per month?
Per month over 6 months, maybe, or 3 months. I don't know. That's a lot for a monitor. Every other month for, you know, at least, I don't know how to word it. I basically just want someone to look at those charts 2 or 3 times over that, over a 6 month period. What are your thoughts? How should I word it, Mr. Harris?
I think if that's the intention, then why don't we do it every 2 months?
Okay.
Have the, you know, a minimum of so many charts reviewed. And then at the end of 6 months, you know, I'm suspecting you'd like a report back.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Do you want the report every time the charts are reviewed, or is one report at the conclusion enough to give you the information that you'd be looking for?
Well, if things are great, you know, we don't need the report. However, if there's a concern, then we should know about it.
And if that's the case, I think we could probably put some language into the terms of the consent agreement to reflect that for the individual to know that, you know, if there's concerns regarding the record keeping or anything, to notify the board promptly.
Okay. Perfect.
Okay.
So in essence, you're asking the monitor to do the monitoring every 2 months of a minimum of 2 records for a 6 month period. But not report to the board unless they see issues with that. Is that mm-hmm. what you're saying? Okay.
Yep.
And are you seeking for example, a vestibular patient to follow through their plan of care to seek those same records on a multiple, or are you having 2 records per?
I'd say different records, but okay. Certainly we were asking her to do CEUs and initial evaluations. So we definitely want the monitor to look at initial evaluations and then ongoing treatment, not necessarily of the same patient, but for patients with cervicogenic issues and vestibular. Does that, how do you feel about that, right. Dr. Hike? Okay.
Okay. And then for, just to confirm, I've gotten the continuing education correct. You were talking about cervical treatment for a minimum of 8 hours, vestibular evaluation and treatment for a minimum of 8 hours, and documentation specific to initial evaluations for a minimum of 3 hours.
And Judy, for the cervical, 8 hours of cervical evaluation and treatment. Not just
cervical evaluation and treatment. Okay.
Yeah. You had that with vestibular, but I wanted to make sure evaluation was on there.
Perfect. It was not, so thank you for that correction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the probation is 12 months.
Yes.
Okay.
Eligible for early termination.
Okay. I think I have it all. Okay, so that was a motion. Did we actually have a second?
Yes, it was me.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so in the case of 2428 Niveditha Krishnamurthy, physical therapist, it has been moved and seconded to offer a consent agreement to include probation for 12 months with the possibility of early termination after successful completion of the following terms. Continuing education, which shall be completed in the 12-month time frame, courses must be pre-approved, may be completed online, and do not count towards renewal requirements. The continuing education shall be completed in the areas of cervical evaluation and treatment for a minimum of 8 hours, vestibular evaluation and treatment for a minimum of 8 hours,
and documentation specific to initial valuations for a minimum of 3 hours. Another term is clinical monitoring to occur on a bi-monthly basis to include a minimum of two records for a period of 6 months to assess initial evaluations and ongoing treatment for patients with cervicogenic and vestibular treatment. The monitor should report to the board any instances where the documentation does not meet requirements.
Can we just amend that really quick? Is the two records every 2 months?
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't hear that. Maybe you skipped over it, but two records every 2 months for a period of 6 months.
Okay. Well, that eliminates the need to clarify bi-monthly.
Okay.
Oh. Okay. If the consent agreement is not signed, Ms. Krishnamurthy will be invited to an informal hearing. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Dr. Hayek.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Abstain.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes.
So, Dr. Krishnamurthy, the board will be in touch for next steps.
Awesome. Thanks. Thanks all.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the board, and Mr. Greer, if we could just clarify on the record, I think the reason you abstained is because you were absent for part of the discussion. If we could just have the minutes memorialize that.
Mr. Harris, you took the words out of my mouth. Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Greer, was that roughly 9 o'clock to about 9:20?
Yeah, about 8:55 to about 9:20.
Okay, I'll check
that. It was right when we ended the last case.
Okay.
When I left.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Dr. Garcia?
Yes. Okay. So, Mindy, are we ready, do you feel, for case 2383?
I would have to check. I see Flynn. I don't see if Flynn is your client, Mr. Nyberg, available?
He is. Yes, I can see him.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Mr. Nyberg. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. I'm sorry for that technical difficulty earlier.
Okay, that's fine. So we are on agenda 11A, Madam President?
Yes.
Okay. This is case 2383. It's a review for compliance with the consent agreement. And from time to time, the board does seek your input and review of a licensee's compliance with their consent agreement or board orders. Mr. Nyberg's consent agreement was executed in January of 2025. He had been working under an interim consent agreement up to that point. And in your review materials, we provided a timeline and some notes regarding his compliance with his consent agreement. And as you can see, it was a little bit bumpy from the start with the chaperone in January. But we received recently, within the last couple of weeks, more recent information that would indicate that things have smoothed out. And you can indicate the notes from the therapist that we received. I think, Judy, we received the letter late Friday, I believe.
Yes. Yes.
And Mr. Nyberg submitted an ethics plan that was fairly comprehensive. So I think at this point, Mr. Nyberg is just here to answer any questions that you might have, and we would re-agendize this matter if there were any additional concerns related to his compliance.
And we would just ask Chair for any of the questions revolving therapy, if those could be done in executive session, if the board did have any questions about any of the protected health information related to Mr. Nyberg.
Absolutely. Thank you. Mr. Nyberg, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Sure, yes.
This is Mr. Greer. Mr. Nyberg, can you just tell us what happened with the first chaperone and how the issues with the first chaperone won't either was a misunderstanding or I'm concerned of what happened there. And then what I want to know is what steps you've taken, if any, to make sure that we're not going to have problems with the chaperone that appears to be working.
Sure. Part of it was about her hours. Her hours were limited. She wanted a 40-hour week, and we had just opened the clinic, and we couldn't provide her with 40 hours. At the time, we were seeing 1, 2, 3 patients at a time in a week, and so the hours were just not there. She was working another job. And she had plenty of hours there, but she decided to give her notice over there when we informed her not to do so because we couldn't guarantee her hours. So that was probably the biggest thing. And with the new chaperone, we've actually promised her 40 hours, even though we are not currently able to give her 40 hours. She stays in the office and she handles other duties, to fill up that time slot so that we can keep her happy and keep her in place.
Okay. Are you aware of, have you seen the text message that she sent to, I guess it was our investigator. Have you seen that?
I believe I read part of it, but maybe not the entire thing.
Do you have any response to the statements that she made, because she doesn't say anything about hours in that text message. If you haven't read it, you haven't looked at it, that's fine.
I don't have it. I don't have it in front of me. And again, it was, 2.5-3 months ago that it happened. So I don't recall. I'm sorry.
It's okay. But so your understanding of why it didn't work out is purely an hours issue.
I think that was part of it. I think she was also, trying to think of the word, how to word it. I think she was fearful of her license being at question. And, we promised her that if she was honest and forthcoming with information about what was happening here to the board, that her license should not be at risk at all. And it was only my license that was at risk. And so we tried to reinforce that as well with her.
And why do you believe that she had that understanding that were a concern? I know you're not her, but.
Yeah, and you're right. Yeah, I think she stated that. I think, I think she stated that to the owner of the facility that I'm in right now, she had told her that she was afraid of losing her license.
Okay. Well, I don't have any other questions.
Any other questions? So, Mindy, this is really mostly informational, correct?
Well, I think at the time in January, given the issues raised by the first chaperone, we began to we didn't have the information from the therapist. We didn't have the ethics plan. And he was in between chaperones. I did confirm that when he was in between chaperones that he was not treating, and he was upholding his end of not treating female patients. So I felt like we were moving in the right direction there. but we were just kind of waiting based on what the chaperone had provided for information. We were waiting to see kind of what the therapist was indicating in terms of his treatment in that area. So, again, we got that late Friday, so.
Okay.
Mindy, did we approved the chaperone, right?
Yes.
What are the credentials of the current chaperone?
Judy.
She's a PTA. She's licensed in Arizona. It is my understanding that she is also employed as a PTA at the facility.
She's not a newbie. She's had several years of experience.
Yeah, she completed the PBI course on chaperoning for board-ordered individuals. And then typically when a chaperone is placed before the board, I contact them. I ensure that they've received a copy of the consent agreement. I check their comfort level with things such as a PTA working in the facility, chaperoning a PT, their thoughts on potentially providing the board with any information that might not be pleasant.
Sure.
And, you know, how comfortable would they be doing that? And they express that information. And then I request that they review thoroughly the consent agreement or board order, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I also direct them to the fact that meeting audio is available.
Okay.
And so it's up to them. And then I don't ask for an answer right then. I ask them to review that information and get back with me and tell me whether or not that they would feel comfortable proceeding.
Okay, thanks. So Mr. Nyberger, I have a question for you. The first chaperone, one of her concerns was that she was asked to treat, her statement is that she was asked to treat patients when she should have been supervising you with female patients. Can you tell me a little bit about how you're scheduling your current chaperone to ensure that she's not distracted by treating patients and that she's fully witnessing your treatment of female patients?
Sure. We've blocked off the schedule for all female patients, and we basically are treating one-on-one. So if I am with a female patient, she is not with any patients at that time until I complete the visit with that female patient. So the schedule is completely blocked off during that time frame. So she does not have a patient scheduled at that time. If the patient arrives early, they're asked to wait in the waiting room until I'm finished.
Okay. And Mindy, do the notes from the chaperone reflect her schedule compared to Mr. Nyberg's schedule?
I don't get a schedule from her. I get the log, but I did confirm with her from the very get-go before she even started treating patients or before she started in her chaperone role that it needed to be understood that she was not to be treating patients at any time that Mr. Nyberg was treating female patients, and she understood that. I do feel she'd call me if there was an issue with that.
Right. Okay, thank you. I think I would like to go into executive session if we could, just to touch base, since we have Mr. Nyberg here, to just touch base on all things as an update to make sure all the T's are crossed and I's are dotted, so we don't have to bring him back another time to ask these same questions we could ask here.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded to go into executive session. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, the purpose of the executive session is to discuss health-related treatment. Is
yes.
that correct?
Correct. And progress. Mm-hmm.
So if we could include that, Judy, in the motion.
Yes. Yes. So yes, the motion will now has been updated to enter executive session to discuss health-related treatment.
Thank you
for that clarification, Mr. Harris. Okay, so at this point, Mr. Carey, Mr. Nyberg, I'll be sending you an invitation to the executive session. That'll take me just a moment.
Judy, I am putting down 10 o'clock.
For the executive session?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
I will stop the recording at 10. Thanks, Monica.
You're welcome.